Absolutely. Final hour now. William Henry, investigative mythologist. We're going to talk a little bit about the pyramids with William and also take your phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM. What is your fascination with Egypt, William? You've been there a lot.
Well, I mean, it is such a place of secrets, George. I mean, when you go there, when you're in the temples, it's just such a heightened, energetic place. I mean, you just really feel the energy of the place, be it in the pyramids or some of the other temples. And the other thing I like about it, I mean, you've got 3,000 years of history there. This is a civilization that lasted not hundreds of years, but thousands of years. And so if you just look at the timeline and just pick a point in time, there's just endless fascination in virtually every era. Right now I'm kind of focused on the 18th dynasty, which was the era when, like, the alchemical gold secrets, the white powder gold secrets were revealed, and they had this renaissance going on in ancient Egypt. And so that's going to be one of my primary focal points when I go back in January, is really looking at that area.
You know, I had asked Zahi Hawass when he was on the program what his reaction was, because, as you well know, William, he does not believe in, you know, ancient astronauts that helped build the pyramids. He doesn't believe in any theories other than the Egyptians did it, and they did it with conventional ways. I asked him about the incredible picture that you and I have talked about in this program before, and that was that tablet of Abydos.
Oh, yeah.
And he said he didn't know about it. I find that hard to believe.
Yeah, I do too. They're doing so much work at Abydos right now. They're getting ready to turn that place into a major attraction. They're moving over 90 households out from the front of the temple, which suggests they might have made a major discovery there, one, and two, that they're preparing to really open that place up in a dramatic way. So, no, I'm sure he's well aware of it, and a whole lot more, especially Abydos is really ground zero for the ancient Egyptian mysteries. It was a place of pilgrimage for a couple thousand years, and it's where the Passion Play of Osiris was performed. It's called the Gate of the Gods. It has, you talk about Stargate and wormhole imagery, it's loaded up in that temple. It's absolutely phenomenal.
To you, when you look at that tablet of Abydos, doesn't it look like a helicopter in a submarine, in a boat, in a UFO or a flying craft?
Without a doubt. I mean, some say that it's a superimposition of two hieroglyphs that merge together to create it. I always just kind of look at the end result. I mean, if it looks like a duck, it could well be a duck. But Abydos, again, I mean, it would make sense if that were indeed true, that is a helicopter and it is a tank and a flying vehicle, because they also have on the temple walls there in the Osiris Chapel, which is one of my specialty, you see the King Seti being transformed and, in fact, teleported into the dimension of the blessed. They literally show there a teleportation device as well.
That is not somebody's vivid imagination either. There were no Da Vincis doing what they were doing then.
No, absolutely not. And they were leaving a clear record of how this figure, it was actually Ramses, who also built the Luxor Temple, Ramses II, who showed how his father, King Seti, became a light being, an ascended being, and joined the gods. And he went through this ladder, pillar, or stairway to heaven that I refer to as the Osiris device. And when you look at that device, looks like the Ark of the Covenant with a pillar attached to it on one wall. That's what you see. And on the opposite wall, it's the same device, but now they've got this wormhole-shaped ship attached to it. And in the center of the pillar is the king being transfigured into a light being. The term we use today is he's being teleported. He like Osiris, is being cut to pieces and then so that he can be reassembled at his point of destination.
Okay, let's go to the phones now. Long Island, New York, Keith, first-time caller. Thanks for calling, Keith.
Hi, William. Just to follow up, you said it looks like a picture of the Ark of the Covenant.
Mm-hmm.
What the size of the king's coffer, is that the same size as the Ark was commanded to be built? And also, there's a pit in the bottom of the Great Pyramid that's supposedly the same size. I'm not sure. I heard it a while ago about the size of the pit and the size of the coffer. that it doesn't look like so it was meant for a person, but it was meant for something else.
Yeah, that is one of the takes, is that red granite sarcophagus inside the King's Chamber matches the dimensions of the Ark of the Covenant. Now, as to the pit beneath, I think it's a lot larger than the dimensions given for the Ark of the Covenant. I haven't actually been in the pit. They keep it pretty well locked off now for people to get in there, but people have gone down there and told me that it's pretty wild place.
Okay, next up, Chicago, Illinois, we go. Rob, you're on. Hey, Rob.
It's a pleasure, George.
Thank you.
I've listened to you for many years. I appreciate you very much. My question or comment is about the ancient religion of the Ninth. From my studies of Heliopolis, if we look at the architecture around us, particularly government buildings, churches, banks, the architecture includes the symbols of this religion. And I got a question. The question is, do you believe that there is a hidden religion for the elite people of the planet, of this religion?
That's a good question. An original source religion, perhaps, that contained all the symbols that you ultimately find and disperse throughout the various religions of the world. I think that's a very good possibility. And again, it's up to us as individuals to learn to read these symbols and to interpret them and to recognize that these symbols are used for a specific effect. On the Coast website, I put up the campaign icon of Barack Obama, which, in the words of the designer of that logo, it was meant to have him symbolized as the sun, as the new, in fact, sun god. And so what you see in there is a white sun with the blue dome of heaven up above. And without question, these people are masters of this symbolism. They are using these symbols on us, and some say against us. And we have to learn the language of symbols in order to be able to recognize what is being done to us and to make a decision or a choice if we want to continue to allow those symbols to affect us in the way that they do. The all-seeing eye on the back of the $1 bill is the all-time classic example in America of a sigil, of a magical symbol that keeps all of us interconnected. As long as you've got that dollar in your pocket, you are connected to the ideals of that symbolism on that piece of paper. That's the idea of and the power of symbols. It's very subtle, very emotional, but incredibly powerful, and they use it. Advertising, of course, uses it, but now the politicians especially are using this symbolism today.
Okay, great. Next up, let's go to Brian in Boulder, Colorado. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Brian.
Good morning, gentlemen. William, and I do mean that in all ways, gentlemen. William, many, many people are coming for the upcoming presidential inauguration to Washington, D.C., and what would you suggest they do?
What I would suggest you do, and thank you, that's a very good question. You know, they're coming for the inaugural, which is an ancient Egyptian festival where we now are inaugurating a new head of state, a head of government, which means this person, the president, is supposed to be above party politics. What I would love to see happen is for people to go into the rotunda of the Capitol, go into the center of that room, lay on your back, look up into the apotheosis of George Washington, look George Washington in the eye, and start ringing that bell-shaped dome. Start sending words of power, the words like yes, love, victory, hope, peace. Place those words and ring that bell with those words, and recognizing that that has a tremendous effect, that that is one of the most powerful stargates on the planet. And by you doing that, you are engaging in what I refer to as the American right. It is your right to go in there and lay on your back and look into that dome and to offer prayers for hope and peace. That, I believe, is ultimately what that dome was designed to do, to be like a true Liberty bell. And when we get that bell ringing in the right way, that's when we can start seeing a new day rising and a new dawn emerging. And that's what we're all called upon to do right now.
Let's go to Cheyenne, Wyoming, William, where Eric is waiting for you. Hey, Eric.
Hey, guys. It's wonderful to speak with you. This feels like a dream, except I already pinched myself earlier tonight. George, for you real quick, in my kitchen I have the spice jar of prophecy. The label says, time leaves.
I love it.
William, I got to ask you, do you have a mailing address like the one on your website, on your business card? Can I send you a snail mail through that?
Yes, you can.
That's fantastic. I don't have a computer, and it's pretty difficult to get to one. William, I want to say one thing quickly. I've noticed something kind of interesting. When I turn on the water tap in my kitchen or in my bathroom or at work, it always makes the same sound. It's my best approximation would be like the Russian spelling T-S-I-O-L. It always makes this T-hole sound when I turn a tap on. I wondered if language has something to do with the sounds of nature being duplicated. And you have mentioned the languages of the angels and of the archons, but I have never heard you talk in detail about them. I don't know what they are. I wonder if you could speak to that. And that's all I have for tonight. Thanks, guys.
Okay.
Okay, well, wow, lots of questions there. Thank you for those. The
just
archons,
handle as many as you can, William. Okay.
Yeah, I talk about the archons in my DVD presentation, Morph. They're also called the rulers. The Gnostics at Nag Hammadi, who lived right near Abydos in Egypt, spoke of them as not very pleasant beings. The Gnostics believe, have a divine spark within us. It's our true self, our essential self. And in the first apocalypse of James, Jesus warns that these archons are like toll collectors. They seek to take our soul by theft. And in other of the Gnostic Gospels, they talk about how these archons are, while they're not entirely alien, they're in fact our cousins. And they go on to say that the only way to evade these archons, who many believe are equated with the reptilians or the grays, in fact, the only way to evade them is to become a perfect being. Because the idea is that if you're perfect, these archons, the reptilians, cannot see you. And so this is why the Founding Fathers, I believe, were inserting that word perfection into the American vocabulary. We are to become perfect, and here's the ultimate reason why. And I think that what happened, George, to go out on a limb here in a way, when the Tibetans talk about the great perfection, they're talking about transforming ourselves into light beings. They are very clear that that teaching about how to become a perfect being is not an earthly teaching. It's taught in 13 different solar systems within our galaxy and probably originated in one of those other solar systems. It's not from Earth. And so if you add that together with George Washington as a perfect being, as an apotheosized being, it suggests, wait a minute, was Washington somehow connected with an extraterrestrial teaching here? Is that the ultimate message in the Stargate capital of the United States? It sounds like a stretch, but when you really look into it, you're confronted with that very strange but very powerful possibility.
Okay, next up, let's go to Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Hello, Niamh. Go ahead. You're on with us.
Hi, William. Hi,
hello.
George.
Hi.
I live in Lancaster, and I wanted to know if you knew that Lancaster City was planned and the layout of Lancaster City was laid out by the Freemasons.
No, I did not know that. I love Lancaster. It's a beautiful community and been there to Reading many times as well as Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of history here, and George Washington kind of roamed around this area quite a bit. But my question is, I've been a born-again Christian for 31 years and just a lot of religion, a lot of church, and I want to know how I can get, you know, knowledgeable about the things that you're talking about, because I know, you know, you go into the church and you mention it to the pastor, and then right away they think you're into New Age.
Right.
So
the reason is because they don't know what these symbols mean. They repeat words like glory and perfection and words such as that. They don't know the meaning of those words, unfortunately, and that's not an incrimination. It's just a fact, I'm sorry to say. And That's why they get afraid, and they have to label it as somehow occult or New Age. In fact, there's nothing New Age about what we've been discussing tonight. We're talking about the original sacred tradition. And not to sound like a commercial here, but if you wanted to learn about these, I would recommend especially the my new presentation of The American Rite, More for the Light Body Effect, goes into the symbolism in detail.
Okay, so it's studying the symbols more?
Yes, because you see, there were two revelations. You have the written word, and then you have an oral tradition that was often expressed in pictures. And unfortunately, people were told that the word had more power than the image. Whereas in the Gnostic and the parallel mystery tradition, the image, the picture was everything, because they believe that if you could connect with, like, for example, the icons of Jesus's transfiguration when he turns into a being of light, they created images called icons with the understanding that you could connect mentally, physically, spiritually, and emotionally with that iconography, and what that symbolism would do would be to kickstart that process within you. That is the true power of the human body. The Tibetans teach the same thing, that we don't need a written gospel. All you need are these icons, these images of transfiguration, and the ability to emotionally connect with them in order to kickstart this process within you. It's an amazing, amazing concept.
Are you familiar with the work of Maurice Cotterell, William?
I've fairly well kept up with Maurice's work, yes. Mm-hmm.
I mean, he reminds me a lot of you. He's the older version of you.
Well, that is a true compliment, George, because Maurice Cotterell, wow, I think he is just an absolute genius.
Yeah,
and I mean, what a mind. Just absolute, you know, I had a pleasure of meeting him, I don't know, about 10 years ago at a UFO conference, and he just struck me as having this just, you know, wonderful energy and just coming from the right place.
Absolutely. Again, tell us a little bit about the American Rite DVD.
It's my new DVD. It covers all of the symbolism we've been talking about tonight in the U.S. Capitol, focusing on the dome. It's really an invitation to explore the Capitol in a way that no one, I think, has ever really seen before. And it's not just because I'm the author of it, but it is truly a revelation of the true American secrets. This is what the founders wanted us to understand, is that we can become these transformed beings. And the American Rite DVD is available from my website, williamhenry.net. It's $19.95 plus $5 postage and handling. Folks who don't have the computers can call my order line, which is 615-292-7863.
We'll be back in a moment. We're going to take final phone calls with our guest William Henry next on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, Dr. John Abramson joins us. Overdosed America, The Broken Promises of American Medicine. Should be a fascinating program right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with William Henry, investigative mythologist. William, how did you become an investigative mythologist? I mean, were you born this way?
That's funny. Well, you know, it's a title I came up for myself in, must have been 1995, somewhere in there. I was thinking, well, what do? I'm not really a journalist. I'm not an investigative journalist because my specialty is mythology. And I just decided, okay, investigative mythologist. That's what I do. That's who I am. And I guess I was born this way. I thought I started on this path around 1982 when I read Holy Blood, Holy Grail. I was in college, and that kind of awakened me to the idea that there's this whole parallel mystery tradition, and I just kept pulling on the string and pulling and pulling, and here we are today, laying on our back in the U.S. Capitol looking up at this deified being called George Washington.
What would you have gone into? What field had you not gone into this?
Actually, I was going to be an entertainment lawyer.
Really?
Yeah, I was. My father was in the music business. He was an attorney, and I was going to kind of follow in those footsteps. And I was at a small Southern Baptist college here in Nashville that had a music business program that would prepare you to go work on Music Row in the country music field or whatever. And the catch was you had to take Bible study classes. And I had moved from Detroit to Nashville when I was 19 years old, and my parents were not particularly religious. We went to church on Easter and that, but I wasn't raised in a religious household, and so when I got to this college and started taking Bible study classes, it was really a kind of a first introduction, and I immediately read Holy Blood, Holy Grail, which is considered heresy or blasphemy to some, and again, it just ignited something within me, like that had been laying dormant, and that's been the power pack that's kept me going ever since.
Let's go to Florida. Thomas, you're up with us. Hey, Thomas.
Hello, William.
Thank you, Thomas.
Thank you for my call. I've been listening to you, and my concern or my thinking is that Washington, founder of our country, and his faith, and how he led our country to where it is today, and what he did, and the measures that he took, and the faith that he had, and the Masonic thinking that led him to do what he did. Have you ever given any consideration to his prayers?
Actually, no, I have not.
There is a thing or a site that has his daily prayers, where he would give a prayer in the morning and in the evening. And he did this religiously, regularly. And it is very, very deep and is very divine. And his prayers are very humble to his position and the fact that he had a lot to have to handle on the destiny of our country. And it is something that I would ask anyone they would like to check Washington's prayers. And he's been found to have been kneeling. And nobody knew that he was, but overheard, like Valley Forge, just praying in his hardest of times. It was the very thing that I found that his character and the building of his heart is something that I think we could all use.
I agree, and that's why I'm out talking about this and trying to raise awareness that, wait a minute, there's a whole other side of the story.
Oh, where'd you go, William? We lost William. So we'll try to get William back as soon as possible. William's phone has gone. So, Tom, recall him and disconnect and get him up as soon as you can. If you would, because William's gone. Henderson, North Carolina. Jimmy, you're on the air. Go ahead, Jimmy.
How you doing, George?
Great. Go ahead.
It's an honor to call you, speak to you.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to ask Mr. Henry if we could, on dollar, there are 10 stars on each side of Abraham Lincoln's head for a total of 20 stars. Does that have anything to do with what we're talking about? What's this, any significance?
Well, that's a great question, though. William, we're still trying to reconnect with him. His phone is gone all of a sudden. Seems like every time somebody gets involved in something controversial, they are gone. But tell me a little bit. How did you observe this?
I was just – he was talking about Lincoln, and he was talking about the 72 stars. And I remember there were some stars on the $5 bill. And I just pulled one out and looked at it, and I said, I wonder if that has any significance, you know, because I know some symbols on money has meaning.
Well, that's, you know, if we get William, that'll be great. If not, we're going to go to open lines for the rest of tonight. CJ in Phoenix, go ahead. You're on the air with us. Hey, CJ.
Hi, George. It's a privilege to be on the show, and you guys are having a great show. Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
Okay, my main question is, I know William's not on the line anymore, but recently, with a lot of the things going on with the economy and certain subjects I've dabbled in involving conversations we've dealt with today, talking to Freemasons and Illuminati, I've paid quite serious attention to some of the Walt Disney films, and I know that there's been reference to him being of Freemason you know, alliance with them. But my main question is, you know, one thing that startlingly pops in my head is the movie The Lion King, and a lot of the instances referencing the circle of life, the taking over of the of the Pride Rock, of which would be something of like an Atlantean, maybe an American civilization, and just maybe some of the thoughts with that, just maybe some of the messages that are put across, and maybe some comments on that.
Well, there's no question about that a number of prominent Americans were a part of those organizations. And it doesn't mean that the organizations are sinister by any means, but it is ironic that, you know, most of them are part of that. And, you know, and they've been that way for a long, long time. We're going to go to open lines because William Henry is, do you got him? Okay. You back, William?
I'm back. I'm on my cell phone. My line just went dead.
Jeez. Here we go again.
I think we talked about Jordan Maxwell too much.
You know what? You might be right. They're out to get that guy. They really are.
My phone is deader than a doornail.
Okay. Well, you stay on the backup. We've got only about 10 more minutes with you anyway, William. And, you know, we'll see if we can just reconnect some of the callers again for you. But we'll go to Larry, first-time caller. Larry in Florida, you're up. Go ahead, Larry. We got William back for you.
We got William back. William, first-time caller, long-time listener. I just wanted to make reference to the Great Pyramid, and you all mentioned Edgar Casey earlier. He was Priest Ra-Ta in a previous incarnation, and he assisted in the building of the Great Pyramid. And Toth oversaw a lot of this, the god Toth. It was built by the survivors of Atlantis. And there is a chamber below the right paw of the Sphinx, and it contains a Valix and the records of mankind on Earth. You mentioned you were going to Egypt, and I just wanted to mention that. And I'm very inspired. A light came on tonight, and a lot of things got connected for me that have not been put together for a long time, and I've been confused, and everything just come together. And there's a line in the Quatrains in Nostradamus, which reads, "A wise man staring at the moon discovered the secret," and I think I've discovered the secret.
Wow, that's fantastic. And I'm glad you brought up Thoth or Tahuti, the Egyptian god of divine magic and alchemy, because in Rome they called him Mercury. And when you look up into the dome of the United States Capitol, who do we see but Mercury with his caduceus wand in hand, his symbol of the ancient mysteries, offering a bag of gold to Robert Morris, the financier of the American Revolution. And this is one of the key mythological figures that you see surrounding George Washington, and it just makes you wonder, okay, this is all alchemical imagery, it's all about transformation, but was there in fact some kind of alchemical gold involved in the financing of the American Revolution? Is that why that figure is there, or does it just simply mean that this is a nation based on commerce? You kind of have to decide, but I think it's important to point out that that symbolism is there. And by the way, Tahuti's caduceus, which was found at Abydos, on the walls at Abydos, is also the primary symbol of the United States House of Representatives. It's the symbol of the power and authority of the House of Representatives. When you go into the House chamber, you will see that caduceus sitting there with the entwined serpents going up up the rod, with the illuminated sun disk on top. It's a very powerful symbol and is yet another way in which American and Egyptian symbolism are linked.
Let's go to David in Tucson. Go ahead, David.
Hi. Yeah, I wanted to share an experience on an eighth grade field trip to the U.S. Capitol I went on. Our guide, okay. We went in, he walked to this one spot on the ground, took a few steps, told us to all gather around him and face the tile floor. He walked off. We're standing there looking on the ground, and then we start hearing him talking like he's right next to us. I turn and look. He's about 50, 60 feet or so. He's quite a ways away. And his back was to us, and he was facing the ground talking. And he explained it how that it's constructed, that the sound bounces off. And you can hear it. So,
you were in Statuary Hall, where they have that acoustical effect built into the architecture. It's a cool experience to be in there. And it,
yeah.
again, is one of the examples of that you find that kind of acoustic trickery in other temples, and that is, it is one of the hallmarks of a temple facility, and that's why, you know, I think we can readily justify or understand now that the U.S. Capitol is, in fact, a temple. It is a religious facility, not a civic facility, and what that means is that we're calling ourselves to a higher standard now if we recognize that the heart of our nation is a temple.
Next up, let's go to California. William, you're on with William. Hello, Bills.
Hello, how you doing?
Good.
Well, it's a pleasure to actually talk to you. I just finally got your station here. I'll make my question quick. Have you ever taken an overlook over Washington, D.C. at the actual Capitol building landscaping? Because it looks like an owl. And at the very bottom of that owl, and at the bottom of that owl is that same triangle, a pyramid that's on the dollar bill.
Mm.
And I never put it together until I watched an Alex Jones clip called The Bohemian Grove. And it's where they worship an owl, a stone owl. And it's about Satanism, really. So it's, I was wondering if you'd ever heard of that.
Yeah, I would disagree about the whole Satanism bit, but there's no question that it is an owl. In fact, my co-Stargate hunter, Dr. Mark Gray, is bringing that forward when we bring out some new information here after the first of the year. Because actually, when you're entering that visitor center, you're entering, walking right into the pineal gland, what corresponds with the pineal gland. And as a consequence, it is really more about a place of illumination. And if people want to think of enlightenment and illumination as satanic, that's their prerogative. But personally, I don't look at it that way.
Next up, Camden, New Jersey. Bill, you're on the air. Hi, Bill.
How you doing? I'm a first-time caller. I've been listening for years.
Well, great. I'm glad you made it in here.
Yeah, the measurements of the pyramid, are they the same as the measurements of the cap area on the Washington Monument? Because that's shaped like a pyramid.
Well, the pyramid's about 480 feet tall,
right,
William?
Yeah, the Washington Monument is 555 feet tall. So, no, they don't actually correspond.
No, I'm talking about the shape, just the cap area.
Oh, the capstone
area? Oh, just the pyramid on top?
Yes.
I don't think that's 52 degrees. The slope on that is 52. I'll have to check that out. That's a good question.
And what is your phone number again for ordering?
My order line is 615-292-7863.
Oh, 63. Okay. All right, then.
Hope they didn't cut that too, William.
Yeah, I know.
That was bizarre. West of the Rockies, Joy in California. Hey, Joy.
Hi. You had a caller earlier inquire as to the relative size of the pit and the, I don't remember if it's called the sarcophagus, but up in the Great Pyramid where the sarcophagus would have been located.
Mm-hmm. The King's Chamber, what's so called.
Right, the King's Chamber. I meditated inside that empty, those four walls, and then I climbed down into the pit, a little while later. When you go down into that pit on the little metal ladder and then you make a right turn, and it's extremely tight. It would almost match the internal dimensions of that marble rectangular thing inside the King's Chamber, but not the external dimensions. It's way too tight.
Hmm.
I'm a small person, and I could stand there, and my hands could touch both sides all the way around. Plus, it's really rough and not finished. It does not have a rectangular shape. It's very uneven.
Wow. Well, I'll keep that in mind when I go into the pyramid in a couple of weeks here in January. And I'm also looking. I've been told about a secret door in the Grand Gallery, too, so I'm going to be kind of feeling my way for that as well. And I'll be happy to share whatever I discover on my website or maybe back here on Coast sometime.
Let's take a final caller. Keith, first-time caller. Real quickly, Keith, go ahead.
Real quick, do you guys ever hear of Joseph Newman and what he says about 2012? Basically, he shows in an experiment of the magnetic field from the center of the galaxy is very thin, and as we pass it, it's going to create solar flares and basically, that's going to be the fire that burns the sun.
Well, you know, he may be right. He may be onto something. And how does he spell his last name, Keith?
N-E-W-M-A-N, josephnewman.com.
Newman. Newman. Okay, we'll check into that. William, are you familiar with this guy's work?
No, I'm not. But you know, on this idea of the fires, I mean, that is one of the fires from the sun. That is one of the takes on the inscription above the cross of crucifixion. It says Inri. It is supposed to mean Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews. But in the esoteric tradition, it means by fire, frequency, vibration, humankind is made holy, whole, and complete. And so, again, we can look at these fires as destructive, or we can look at them as possibly an evolutionary force for the positive. And I, of course, am hoping that I'm right.
All right, my friend. William, we're running out of time. Get this website out, your toll-free number, one more time.
Okay, my website is williamhenry.net, and the number is 615-292-7863.
Very good. That's William Henry. For Jason Bowers, Dave Caprita, Dan Galante, Kiris Coburn, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.